Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and physics and some other topics sometimes thrown in. No real politics tonight, so that's kind of not on the burner right now. A lot going on in the world, but I like to talk when people aren't aware of what's happening sometimes. So anyway, I would like to tonight kind of lead off with a show that deals with some of the aspects of what we talked about last week. You know, you don't have to have heard last week's show to be able to understand tonight's show. But if you didn't listen to last week's show, it would be good at some point, I think, worthwhile, to, after you hear tonight's show, to go back and listen to last week's, because it will kind of help bring things together a little bit better. Tonight I thought we'd talk about the lower self and consciousness. Consciousness is one of the hardest things for people to be conscious or understanding. Those are kind of synonyms of. So, you know, it's very interesting that this is a very difficult subject for some people. The lower self is also a difficult subject because it's the part of us that is conscious. And how it provides consciousness, what keeps it up, what lowers it, what are the parameters that makes one person conscious in some ways and not in others, and a lot of other things I would like to talk about this evening. And hopefully this will make some more sense, again, because we've had shows dealing with the monastic dimension or mental dimension and some of the elements. Last week we talked about the first two parts of God's mind, which are consciousness and cause, and love, and then wisdom going together, which creates spirit, by the way. And then form or manifestation of what the thought is of God. The first two parts are God's thought. Those two parts that are God's thought and spirit have a lot to do with what we're going to be talking about today. The manifestation is very important because I think you'll gain an understanding and appreciation for what consciousness actually is. So it's a really fascinating subject, and how we develop it is in human beings is tricky, because human beings are the first species that generally have, we'll say, a well-rounded or a significant level of consciousness. Animals that are not connected to human beings, such as our pets, and especially that are not advanced animals, don't have much consciousness. They have thought and they have instincts. And the instincts are actually the thought and consciousness of another being, which is called a group soul. So animals are connected to this group soul. But as far as their own consciousness with a self-structure, very, very few animals have this. Only the most advanced of the primates, generally speaking, and dolphins might be included in that, and then some whales. But it's very, very small, very, very small number, and maybe a kind of one or two kinds of gorillas. When you look at the total number, it's just a very, very small number. And even they have only the rudiments of consciousness, not what we have as a well-rounded consciousness. Now, what do we mean by consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to take some knowledge that a person has, we have, and combine it with other knowledge and see how they connect together. Knowledge is the ability just to know something about a single thing, but the ability to know more than that by joining one knowledge to another, one thing you know from one thing to another, is a product of consciousness. So when I say product, that means multiplied by the ability to be conscious. So a very interesting idea. That's one way to define consciousness. There's many other ways. And the word consciousness also could be defined by the words understanding, okay, the word planning, all right, and then a bunch of other words that have to do with love and giving and et cetera. So consciousness has a very broad aspect. It's not something that is narrow by any stretch of the imagination. That's the reason it's so hard for most people to understand it, because of this broad definition that has many, many aspects. Okay, so let's talk about the lower self then. What is the lower self? The lower self is a part of spirit that is in all human beings. We all got it. And it's the lowest level of spirit that can function independent of form anywhere in anything. Human beings have it. We got it. Hey, that's cool. What does that do for us? I'll tell you in a few minutes. But you see, spirit generally doesn't like functioning in the lower mental world at all. And there is only some spirit that is developed enough that it could continue to function as low as what is called the fourth, okay, listen to me, the fourth sub, you're way down there, plane of the lower mental, of the fourth mental plane, the fourth sub plane. So it gets down to the fourth mental subplane, which is just where, the fourth mental subplane, you don't have to know all these numbers, is just where the lower mind begins. And then it goes down four sub levels to the lowest point. It's right in the middle, literally, of the fourth subplane or subdimension of the mental world. Now, why is that so important? Well, it's in a balancing or tipping point. And it allows the self, because it is so centrally located, it allows this little thing we call ourself, which is a part of God, of course, because it's spirit, a little piece of God's mind is in the balancing point between the higher mind, including a little piece of the lower mind, and the lower mind itself. It's a fascinating thing that this very, very, very narrow range of the lower mental body and the lower mental plane, because our body is part of the plane, is right square in the middle. There must be something about that, right? Well, I'm going to explain what that does for us so that we can kind of understand how consciousness is developed and how humans maintain a certain level of consciousness. So, but fascinatingly, this is the lowest of all living beings, period. Even the more advanced beyond human beings don't usually keep their lower self at this point. Only humans have it. Animals sometimes get a little tiny, tiny fraction of it if they're close to a human being. They become a very close pet, and they have to be a more advanced animal. The kind of animals that some people have as pets, but not all. And then they can kind of get a little glimmer of this spirit in themselves once in a while. Sometimes animals develop a lower self, but it isn't at this balancing point. So it's found elsewhere, usually a little higher, not lower, in the lower mental mind. And when they do, they exhibit some aspect of self. They can recognize who they are. Like if they look in a mirror, they know they're seeing themselves. They can recognize that. That's a good example of consciousness, of self-consciousness. Okay, so that's a good thing. But when they do that, that doesn't mean they can selectively use that self-consciousness the way we do. Yeah, that's the difference. They can't really operate with it as much as human beings. Okay, and there's something above on the fourth subplane of the mental body and mental plane itself, and it's actually in the mental brain, if you want to call it that. the physical, the form brain part of us, and that's a mental brain. Yeah, mental. It's like we have a physical brain, we have an astral brain, we also have a mental brain. Now, this mental brain is it's a lower mental plane part of the lower mental brain, but we just call it our mental brain. And the three parts, the three sub parts that are higher than where the self is, are completely controlled by the personality. Honestly, personality. And you say, well, that personality, you've talked about that before, isn't that like some part of us that is subconscious? It's not something we can understand or know about because it works subconsciously. Yeah, it's our subconscious mind. And I use the word personality because in ageless wisdom literature, if you go back, way, way back, long before there was technically recorded history, there was still the name personality, at least as we tend to use the name today, to describe this subconscious part of us. I know personality is used all over the place today in a lot of connotative ways, quite different from what I'm describing. So if you would prefer a different name, that's okay. But for right now, that's how I'm going to use that word. So the personality has three parts to itself. And they're on the first sub-plane of the fourth, the second sub-plane of the fourth, and the third sub-plane of the fourth, superior in position in terms of that each sub-plane is a little more strong, has a stronger amount of the ability to overall create thought forms. So the personality is stronger in its ability to create thought forms than is the lower self. The lower self really is not even made out of thought forms, and its ability to create thought forms has to go through and with the personality. So we wouldn't have a conscious self if we first didn't have a subconscious that was kind of working with it. The two have to come together. And one of the secrets, we'll say, of human beings advancing themselves in consciousness and becoming more and more, you know, a spiritual, is to take the subconscious part of us, the personality, and make it fully conscious like the self is. So the two become indistinguishable. There's a whole process involved in doing that, which we're not going to talk much about tonight, but there is. And there have been yogas designed in how to, because a yoga means union, how to unify these parts of our mental body. No kidding. Okay, so we got the lower self is all spirit, and it's the lowest any spirit can go on its own without just getting lost, period. And it's certainly, and without being, without losing itself. Okay, now, more definitively then, what does a self do? What is a self? Well, a self is conscious enough to be aware of itself in the present sense. Okay? Aware of itself in the present sense. The personality, this is a weird thing, because it is composed more of energy than it is of spirit. There's some spirit with it, but it's more of energy, and the energy is not the greatest, the most advanced energy in the universe. It's just some of the more advanced energy that's found at the higher part of the lower mental body. That's what it is. So this energy does not maintain an ability in the present sense to be aware of itself. It can only be aware of itself in the past and the future. Isn't that weird? So if you can imagine, and I would like you to do this now, because this is a weird thing we're going to talk about now. Just imagine that in everything you do, every part of every instant of your existence, the only thing you are ever aware of is what you have done and what you're going to do but you're never aware of anything you're doing at the moment. That would be pretty tricky and pretty weird. And that is what a personality actually experiences. That is the subconscious state. It's not an unconscious state. It's a subconscious. That means below full consciousness. And people who are stuck in their personalities a lot of the time cannot fully sense all parts of time, and particularly in the fourth subplane of the mental world, they can only function in the past and the future, but not the present, because they're stuck in their personalities. For those of you who have read the textbook I wrote, Lights and Meaning, you already know that, don't you? Because that's in there in a number of places. Yeah. So it's one of those interesting, quirky things that humans have. And you might say, what the heck does that do us any good? Why didn't our soul create a personality that is just fully present and get rid of the business of self, or vice versa? Why do we have to have a subconscious part of us at all? Well, we're going to get into that, but the answer is pretty direct, and that is this. The self takes time to be developed, about 21 years on average. And for the first 21 years, when it reaches about 21 years of age in a person, the self is only about conscious, I should say, about a fraction of its total time. It's not really that a person exists. They don't have a self that's like fully there. And further, it isn't until age 28 that people start seriously being concerned about attempting to be not only conscious, but also truthful, where truth starts making some level of difference, and so does things like love and wisdom and the stuff we talked about last week, parts of God. So, on an average, now for some people that happens much earlier, but others it may not take place ever, you know, in a lifetime. Okay, so this is a fascinating thing because now we've got all this problem, you could say, that you don't have a self that's really working very good most of the time. So how do you get going? How do you live the first 21 years? Well, to make up for this, the soul creates the personality. So, and the reason the personality can work so well so quickly is because it doesn't have a present sense of awareness. It isn't self-aware of the present. The personality doesn't have a loss of the feeling of self that it would have because it's given certain ways to think. This is strange now. Remember, God wants us to have free choice. God wants us to think for ourselves. We know that as a fact. Well, we know it based upon my assumptions and other statements, and maybe as a fact if you've thought through the equations and done all the thinking about it. But we know it in some respects. And yet, the personality doesn't have that, really. The personality is given a lot of its thought forms, examples of concepts, that it can use to make concepts from past life experiences that are part of our spiritual genes. And it's constructed more of form, way more of form, about three-fourths in most people of form or more, than it is of spirit, unlike the self. So, you see, it's not like the personality couldn't be made conscious in the present, but when you are conscious in the present, if you're aware that the majority, three-fourths, seven-eighths, it could be with some people, of your thought is not coming from yourself, it's not developed by interaction with things in the here and now as things are going on around you, you continuously would experience a sensation of loss of self which is highly threatening, very disturbing, and dehumanizing. So to make a personality that is functional, that'll work, there is a deliberate construction made. Now, what I'm telling you, I don't know that you're going to find this anyplace else, but you'll have to trust me on this deal. There's a deliberate construction made in the personality, like a defect almost, that because of the way the thought forms are constructed by the soul and solar angel, the kind of the alter ego of our souls, helping out, there's virtually nearly all sense of the present is nullified by the personality structure. And even the spirit that is in the personality is augmented by the solar angel, by a spark of spirit that's very enlightened, that connects the personality to the solar angel, so the personality still doesn't feel a loss of self, even though it's safeguarded to some extent by this missing sense of time, which is the present. So all this is done just to protect us, a part of us, from going cuckoo, because that part, unlike the rest of us, is not given the freedom to think that we would expect from everything I've told you in the past. Now, you could say, well, why didn't you tell us that exception? I've mentioned there are exceptions to that. I just didn't go through all the detail in the past because it's so hard. Look at how much time I've already spent just to get through this part of it and to explain it so maybe it's understandable at this point. Okay, so then you could say, okay, so what is this personality doing then right from birth? It's got these thought forms and some small amount of spirit, which is overrun by the thought forms for a lot of the time. And it has connection to an emerging self, which really doesn't get really going until about sometime between the ages of 5 and 7. Very few people can remember things in any continuity with anything else much before age 5. Only people who are advanced in their consciousness can. And then the most advanced human beings could go all the way back almost to the time they were born. But those are very, very rare. I mean, we're talking about a few people on the whole planet. So it's not a big issue. Most people don't have consciousness of self in a full enough, rounded enough means before 5 years of age to remember much. And the further back you go, the less they have a memory. The reason for that is simple. The self is an empty vessel for most people when they're born because their past lives are not remembered. So if they don't have much memory from their past lives, or only spots here and there, then almost nothing sticks because the self is so minimally developed. And the personality is doing most of the heavy lifting in terms of developing some level of consciousness, but it's very weird how it works. The personality is taking over the role of the past and the future for the toddler, let's say, 2 or 3 year old toddler. The personality is doing almost all of the awareness and consciousness development of the past and the future for the toddler, while the self is isolated and only responding to the present. And the strange thing, especially, I didn't say toddler just for the fun of it, in toddlers, because this is such an uneasy alliance, when the toddler is functioning in their self, they tend to be obstinate, difficult in the beginning of this development, and sometimes even irrational in their behavior, because the personality is sort of letting the self develop. But as far as the past and the present is concerned to that toddler, they're locked into ways of thinking that they had in several prior lifetimes, karmically connected to the new lifetime. Some of it's helpful and some of it's troublesome, depending upon how they live their lives. I hope you're following this. I find this stuff just fascinating because it explains an awful lot about human behavior. But nonetheless, I know it's a bit complicated. So hopefully, if you're getting a little lost in all this, you can go back and re-listen to the show in the next week or so and just say, I missed that part. I didn't quite get it. Okay, so you can re-listen. Okay, so we're just so odd. We're not like other creatures. We're not like dogs or cats or mice or flies, and we're not like superhumans and masters. We're just this weird thing right in the middle of everything, literally on the cross, as some people have said. And unfortunately, this whole thing is kind of set up for us to have to struggle through it. Some suffering is definitely entailed in the process. Because humans can recognize and understand God, and lower beings can't, and higher beings are part of God and know it, so we're kind of just right there struggling to get the whole thing straightened out. And it's one heck of a mess with all this stuff going on in us in a mental thinking sense. It was really goofy. Now, the energies. Let's talk about the energies now. The energies in the personality, which are dominating the personality. There's a little bit of spirit in there. There's even a little piece of enlightened light in it. It's a great thing. It's right in the middle of the personality, called the heart chakra of the brain. Makes any sense. But at any rate, even with all that spirit in there, almost the vast majority of the personality in most people is energy. And energy doesn't particularly think all that great. I mean, yes, these are called deva energies. Now, what is deva? Some people say diva, some people say deva. It doesn't matter what you want to say. The important thing is that they're thinking kinds of energies that think of other energies like themselves. And sometimes they eventually think of spirit. And that's what these things do. But they do it more on a cooperative, collective basis, and they are definitely affected by another kind of energy called elemental energy that's around them as well. And that tends to make them dumb down and lose their ability to work in a conscious way with other types of energies. So because it causes them to want to just become bigger rather than to do things that are intelligent. And so the fascinating part of the personality is it does have some of the better energies to be found in that part of the mental body. But those energies are still not genius-level kind of things. As a matter of fact, they form thoughts that are just literally very mundane in most circumstances. They don't think deeply into the nature of things. Luckily, we have another part to us. That's the higher mind, where our soul is also found. And the higher mind, unlike the lower mind, does not rely on what we call manifested mental form. Instead, the energy in it is like waves that are fluid in movement. You could say the lower mind of a person is more like classical physics and the higher mind is sort of like quantum physics. A little bit like that. And the two are kind of meeting somewhere. But the point is that a concept is a moving picture of a formula. A formula is something that you can make zillions of different kinds of forms out of, and use it over and over again in various ways. It can be mathematically expressed as well. And it's a concept is something that we can apply in many different ways, and we can use without making it specific, whereas thought forms are very specific, and they don't have the flexibility of concepts. The lunar or lower devas of the personality cannot think in concepts. They cannot. So they have to use some higher, they're called solar Davis, solar Davis. And this, these solar Davis are part of a whole being that's sometimes referred to as a solar angel that gives up these Davis so that when we're incarnate, we can use it ourselves. And the lowest ones are the ones that have that the personality has immediate access to them. And so it's constantly using these three lower solar Davis in the higher mind to devise various concepts, including all the ideologies we have and all kinds of other stuff, to make various concrete thought forms about them. A thought form is a statement, a model, an example of the concept. You can have a zillion examples of one concept. That's a pretty large concept if you did, but you could. The more examples you could have falling under the same concept, the bigger the concept itself is. And usually that means it's higher in the higher mental mind. Okay. I hope you're following. That's a lot to think. The lower self, though, has an interesting role in all this. Remember the role, the lower self is right in the middle of the whole mind, the whole mental mind. And what it does, when it starts to awaken, sometime around 3 or 4 years old, it starts to compare the concepts that the personality has already been using to a small extent with the thought forms that have been made. And it starts determining truth. It's the self, the lower self, that first becomes aware whether things are true or not. Wow. And it can do that because in order to find truth, you have to be in all three parts of time. You have to include the present. And remember, the personality doesn't include the present. It just relies upon the self to provide it, sort of, as an aside, because it doesn't want to experience the present, and the soul designed it that way. So, fascinating stuff going on here about time and how things are actually working within our own mind. I think that that is really a cool idea. Now, when we do this kind of magical thing, that a concept is actually being tested by the self and it's challenging the truth, it's because it is so centrally located, it can balance. It can find the balance between a concept and the an example of the concept in thought forms, to see whether the two fit together. And it does it better because of where it's located. So that's the reason the lower self is in such a weird place in human beings. So we can build this quality in us, the quality of finding God's nature in mental virtue, truth itself. Wow. And then to be able to give truth to others through love, wisdom. Talked about that last week. That is pretty, pretty neat, isn't it? So this is something that really makes human beings exceptionally unique. I will be back in about 3 seconds. I have to move something on my desk here.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back, and when I said I was going to leave for a few seconds, the engineer thought I was doing my commercial break, which we did a few minutes early. That's okay. So he chopped me off, but that's all right. My clock fell over because I was slightly geometrically in a weird position. So anyway, I had to push the clock back up. That happens sometimes. Live radio, isn't it interesting? Okay, so back. And there, see, now my self was right there, see, because the self is in the present. Now, let's use that as an example. Let's say the clock fell over and I'm just in my personality. The personality will not notice it happening at the moment. It will only notice after it happened. It could be a second, 5 seconds, even a minute. It could be a day later. And then it will project into the future what it's going to do about it should that happen again, and it might learn something from that. But the problem is, it doesn't have awareness of the present, and that's very, very difficult for it. It likes to have a present because it's in the present that it experiences a lot of the things it enjoys. However, it has to have the self connected to it, or it doesn't enjoy anything, and then it's just miserable. So, smart as it is, the soul realized that the way to safeguard a human being from a part of us that is subconscious and in control is to make the self an absolute necessity, so important to the personality that it treasures it more than anything else, because that's how it gets most of its enjoyment. How did you like that? Didn't know that, did you? Okay, and then, of course, in order for there to be memory, the self needs the subconscious part, because memory is made subconsciously in most cases, most of the time, for most people. When you start making memory on a conscious basis, then you're called a spiritually disciplined disciple, and you would be someone who is living in a different way than most people do. That's a different kind of thing. And then these two parts of us start joining together in a wondrous state, and they join together with the soul and the inner guide or solar angel, the part of our soul that is actually a higher being. And they all start connecting together. They do, through a thing sometimes referred to as the rainbow bridge of energies. These are divinic energies that eventually connect everything together. It's like a big wiring system of the mind. Fascinating, but not, again, for today's show, really. Okay, so the self is, we'll say, intimately connected to the personality. The self gains a full or greater understanding by bringing the subconscious part of us into connection with this conscious part. And it really finds the two have to be together for it to also be in a good state of enjoying or liking its existence. The self also has a profound, we'll say, need to express itself and to grow. A personality doesn't care that much about those kinds of things. The personality wants to have control, both over itself and over other things in its environment. But it doesn't necessarily seek to grow in the ways that we talk about consciousness. It rather, because it is subconscious, it doesn't care much about consciousness, it would rather gain power, control, even things, forms. It's very form-oriented, so it likes to have things, but it doesn't care much about consciousness. The self wants to have much more consciousness and sometimes has less concern for the form things that the personality wants, and sometimes it may not even be as concerned about control, because it could say, well, I don't care if I'm in control or out of control. I don't care if I control anyone else. But the personality is a big, big, that's a main thing to it. And as I've talked about in other shows, it needs to control us because it wants to keep us alive. It is, on a subconscious level, it is the watch guardian of our life itself. And the self, the lower self, does not do a very good job of that until we're much older, way older. So even before anything before 28, and it may not do a very good job at all. So you want a good balance between these two. So you don't want to get rid of your subconscious, and you don't want to get rid of your conscious. You want to be able to blend them together and have a single being, a unified being, a human being, that can use both together and each equally well, with neither being overwhelmed or destroyed or destructive. So these are very important things to consider. And when we start off in life, the self is at the tremendous disadvantage. As we move towards the end of our life, the self is in a much, much greater advantage. And let me explain why. Even though some people believe, and some people know, depending upon who you are, that there is life after death, and you're going to go on and keep living, the self is much more certain of that than is the personality, because it has consciousness and can add together all the different bits and pieces of knowledge to come to that conclusion, whereas the personality doesn't have that ability. And another kind of quirky element is that because the personality is made out of form, all things of form eventually disintegrate. So the personality can only exist if it unifies with the self, and then the two become also part of the soul. And the soul is a form being, but of a higher mental form. So you could say the personality first has to fuse with the soul itself, the human soul. And it's a very, very difficult thing for it to do from where it is in perspective. It has to give up the use of those three higher devonic energies in the conceptual mind, give up those completely to the use of the soul for the purpose of giving rather than receiving, and for the purpose of giving up control rather than controlling. A lot of stuff that is just contrary to its nature. Now, in the beginning of life and in the middle of life, the personality is unwilling to do that in most people. But towards the end of life, the personality becomes very, very concerned because it begins to think that maybe this is the end. And it knows it's vulnerable. Self doesn't believe that in most people. But the personality does, and it becomes fearful. And it suffers a great deal in some people. The interesting thing is, even if it knows that it's going to go on and live in the next lifetime because of knowledge of the stuff I talk about, it also knows from the same knowledge that eventually, if it doesn't rejoin with its soul, it will be destroyed by the end of the lower mental plane life. And this is just terrifying to it. Because consciousness is immortal, but subconsciousness is not. Not. So it's a very, very weird thing. And of course, the self eventually develops not just the ability to be present and to be in the present. It eventually becomes conscious of all or most of the past and future elements that are part of the personality. It may use the personality more like a computer for a memory storage issue. But still, it's becoming this amazing being that eventually realizes, if not here, then in the astral or certainly in the lower mental world, that it's immortal. And it's going to go back into its soul. But only it's going to go, not the personality, not the subconscious part of us. Unless that subconscious part becomes joined with the soul. And the way it does that is to give up the use of these energies that it has. And it becomes a non-controlling instead of a controlling being. It really changes suits, you might say. If it chooses to do that, then it becomes just as immortal as the consciousness, and it never goes away. That personality stays with that person for the rest of their existence. Even when they become masters, they retain that personality, because that's the last personality. It's only added to you if there are additional lifetimes before that person becomes a superhuman. But a new personality is no longer created. It's just added to. Wow. And when does that happen? That happens in the middle of the fourth initiation. So it's way off into the, you know, and once it happens, all personal karma is done. It has to be, because you can't go back and redo and end any karma. But it's a whole new dynamic. And the amount of contact with the solar angel is much less, because the person is starting to become a living soul. A lot of things are changing. No kidding. So it's a good thing. These are great things, but they only happen in the last couple of lifetimes of a human being before they become superhuman. And so the rest of the folks don't have that going on. And the personality in a lot of people, of course, suffers to some extent because it does realize that its existence is limited. Now, there are ways and things that are done to help the personality get through this, especially in the mental world. But here in the physical world, there's no real good remedy to help someone who's suffering, usually towards the end of their life, with the idea of personal destruction. Now, again, on a self basis, the self may feel very good about this. But the personality on a subconscious basis may build up anxieties and fears the person is completely unaware of. And that can cause issues to that person. Now, if you're spiritually disciplining yourself, you'll have much less of that to deal with. But how many people are doing that? And how many people are doing it at all in any mental sense? Virtually none. So that's a difficult problem. It's part of being human. And it's one of the reasons we suffer. We suffer because we're losing some level of consciousness by loss of personality. Even though it's subconsciousness, there's still some loss of consciousness, and therefore there's some level of suffering. But that suffering only comes later in life. Most of the lifetime, the personality didn't suffer at all. It says, well, I can't suffer because I'm not conscious. And it never gets down to these really low levels until the end of life. So it seems to just skeet on by all that stuff and ignore it. And it doesn't concern itself with the fact that the self may be suffering because it's over-controlling and disordered and all kinds of other stuff. It says, too bad. I don't care. So you could say, well, what goes around comes around. Then at the end of this of that life, if that's the way it's been, it really does suffer physical death and sometimes astral death. It really does. Strange stuff. Okay. Wow. Yeah, can you get more? Let's see if we can put some more in your heads, right? Okay, so how is it that we can make this whole system work better to our advantage? Well, the self of us is the part that recognizes and understands God, not the personality. People who, generally speaking, do not believe in God have a deficient self somehow. Some of them have personality disorders. Some of them have lopsided development in their self. One part is overly developed. Sometimes it's the intellectual side. And the other part, the emotive and the physical side, may be underdeveloped. Those kinds of people tend to be intellectualizers in terms of psychology, and they may be very unempathic. They may be very unloving. And they also have a tendency to become arrogant as they get older. So this is an interesting point. Not everybody that doesn't believe in God ends up that way, but they do usually have some deficiency in their self, because it is the self that lets you know there is a God. It figures it out for you. And usually there's some deficiency going on in there. Now, what kinds of things produce this? Well, losses. If a person, when they're young and developing their self, because as I explained, there isn't much self in a young person, has a lot of problems in terms of how their parents are treating them, how the people close to them are dealing with them. Those kinds of issues could, and doesn't always have to, produce a low level of self. Come out, low level of the lower self, okay? Low level of self in them. And if they have that, and they still have a fairly active subconscious, and they have even an intelligent subconscious, that's a bad combination, because that person can grow towards what I just described. And if they don't develop a personality disorder, that means we over-controlling and disorganized personality, what they do is they usually have a over-controlling personality over those cells, and they lack, we'll say, the ability to assert themselves, to be creative, to do all the things that are wonderful about ourselves, to be present. They have a trouble being present in many circumstances. I know some people like this in my life right now, and this is a problem for them. And they constantly are making more and more mistakes, too, because whenever you're not that close to yourself, and you may also have problems with God from that perspective as well, remember, then life becomes a very big challenge, very big, and a difficult one. So that almost anything that you try, if you haven't done it 20 times over, and then therefore it's part of the subconscious, is a great challenge. There's too much slowness, too much wasted time, because that's called mistakes. And there's this distance from God. So you don't see yourself as having the parts of God, which are so wonderful, that you could do anything, that you're capable of being anything, that the world is your oyster, so to speak. And other people are people that you can really be of some service to. You may think just the opposite. this is a terrible thing when the self is diminished. And we all, I think, or most of us know people like this. If some of you out there maybe don't even have some of these issues, how do you get over it? Let's say it did come from childhood stuff. Sometimes it comes from prior childhood stuff because the self has to deal with things that are karmic in its spiritual genes and given to the personality, and it affects it negatively. That's why some people have the almost identical experiences when they're children, but they have very different outcomes because they have a base that's different in their personality. How do you develop a self that's been harmed in this way? Well, the first thing is challenge. Usually a person needs to, in a systematic way, challenge themselves, or somebody has to help them to do it. Because if they're not challenged and doing more and more creative things that every second force them to come out of the subconscious part of them and to deal with it on a self and conscious level, then they won't be present, they won't be creative, and they will remain with the damaged self. So it's how you build up the self. The other thing is character. You want the person to be not just like good because they don't do anything bad. That's one thing. Of course, you do want that. And if they did do bad things, then they would be truly personality disordered. But if they're not disordered and just have a low self, they may do very few bad things. But what they don't do is they don't go out of their way to truly serve other people. They may foolishly give to people. They may be terrible in the way they give to charities or something without looking for accountability and other factors. But they can't do things themselves that really make a difference for others. And they aren't willing to usually bridge that point in their life. So they have distant relationships with people. They aren't willing to get involved to the level where they have to do something like that. These are the kinds of things that have to be challenged on a regular basis, like daily almost, in order to change somebody that has these deficiencies. If you already have it, you can do something about them. Yeah, you could go join a group, and a therapy group might be good, or maybe even individual psychotherapy. But on a spiritual side, if you understand the nature of the problem, I think there are more spiritual answers than there are psychological ones. And I'm speaking, for many years, I did psychotherapy. I mean, you know, I ran a mental health institute, two different ones. And yet I'm telling you that the spiritual side has the better answers. Because the spiritual side is God's side. And the fundamental aspect, the fundamental problem that the self has when it's not developed enough is its lack of belief in God. It might go to church on occasion, it might even say it has a religion. But the belief in God comes from almost an understanding and the knowledge of God that it has to get first. And that understanding and knowledge is missing without the self's completion. It's that understanding that gives us the fortitude to be able to serve other people at losses in ourselves, to give up our lives for other people sometimes, to be great heroes, to do amazing things, and to face the most dangerous and complicated of situations, to create on a regular basis where failure is more apt to happen than success. All those things come from understanding, knowing, believing in God, and becoming part of God by doing those things. That's how you know God exists, and you don't know it if you haven't got the self doing what it's supposed to be doing. Wow. Worst yet is personality disorder. What is that, quickly? Personality disorder has lowered self, but now you add to it the subconscious part of the person may be destructive to itself and to others. Instead of wanting to control for the purpose of protecting itself, it wants to control for the sense of control itself, and it becomes disorganized in that because then it starts doing things that are counterproductive to its very existence, to the existence of the person and the self. And then it sometimes has battles with its own self. It sees itself not only as a cherished thing that gives it enjoyment and provides eventually new awareness and consciousness, it sometimes sees it as a threat because it has become all the person lives through. Disordered personalities are very bad. In psychology, it means one thing, because there's labels and specific things. In metaphysics and spirituality, if a person is personality disordered, they may not fit the exact definitions that are in psychology, because it's a more basic definition. It deals with how the subconscious is not appropriately dealing with its lower self and with the whole person. And it's way more sensitive of a, we'll say, diagnosis than the kind of club and hammer diagnosis that's used in psychology, where you got to have certain really raw behaviors, etc. So I use those words in different ways, depending upon the person and circumstances I'm speaking in. And it is important, therefore, to recognize there's a difference. Okay, so personality disorders are really strange. A significant but still very minor part of the population has them. And the times that they are most damaging is when they are in control of others. Unfortunately, a number of our politicians and sometimes people in police work and et cetera are personality disordered. They seek that for the control and authority and power issues, and they are the most destructive. Not a good thing. Okay? Usually, you don't find in politics so much the low self type of person, because just to get into the political arena requires more self. But you can have a personality disorder where the person has a fictitious self that they lie about to others, and they really function mostly from this disordered personality. That is common, believe me. Even things like narcissism and other things that are part of certain types of personality disorders in psychology are found very often in people who go into certain professions, including politics. Sometimes lawyers have this. Sometimes some other people who have unusual, we'll say, control or power factors because of the nature of their career choice. The personality's most important part of life is its job, okay? And the most important part of the self's life is God. So you got God on one side and job on the other, or career. They're not the same. These two have to get along, but they're far from being the same, no matter what way you look at them, far from being the same. Okay, so let's talk about, let me do this. Let's give you a break, okay? We had an early break by a few minutes. So we'll take a break right now. I want to tell you what's going on with some of the things that I'm involved in and what we're doing. One of the things that we're looking at is getting a distributor to handle the sales of Fai Chi Jizik, because it's becoming something that's more difficult to do for just a few people. So we want to get a big distributor to be handling it, hopefully in the not-too-distant future. It'll make it much more available in areas away from Phoenix and people who don't know who I am. And it will allow many more people to try it and experience it. It works amazingly well for most people, so that's a good thing. Also, just letting you know some of the stuff that we're doing. We have various, we'll say, stresses going on. So this has been a very difficult time members of the group I'm a member of, the spiritual group I'm a member of, and it's also difficult from the standpoint that the world is like coming unglued because of the things I've talked about. And it's not going to get better. Next couple of years, it's going to get worse. So we know that, and we have to do a lot of things in preparation for both ourselves and a more centralized sense, but more importantly, in terms of how we're going to be of service to others and what that service is really going to look like. And it's a tough time. It's a tough time to be a world service kind of group because the world is getting really messed up. Some people say, oh, well, what about all those countries that are going to be free democratic societies? Well, I sure hope that's true. But I suspect that before that happens, we could end up with a massive number of radicalized people running those countries, doing worse things than the countries did in the first place. And the people won't be any better off, unfortunately, maybe worse. So, yes, I am certainly pro-democracy, even more importantly, pro-freedom and liberty. Because democracy could be hampered by people foolishly voting together to limit their freedoms. But so the most important thing here is that rather than democracy, I'm hoping that people become liberated and free, free to express their minds, their hearts, and to create godly things. Now, some of these countries are being infiltrated by or already are overrun by, in some circumstances, darkness and evil, anti-God things. And that's a thing that's frightening. And hopefully that's not going to happen to everyone in one mass wave, but it could. And there could be the potential for serious wars and other things. So we all need, this is a time when everybody needs to be politically savvy, we'll say foreign affairs savvy, understanding the nature of all the things going on around them, and partly, if not fully, within yourself, looking at things on a very wide level of consciousness and not be fooled by false reports in the media or false anything. There's a lot of lies out there, a tremendous amount of propaganda. So try to find truth and live the truth. That's what we're trying to do. And we're also trying at the same time to let others, help others to do that. I want to also mention, in case you're in the Phoenix area, on Monday, this coming Monday, February 21st, there's a talk at Mesa Borders, in Mesa Fiesta Borders. Now, I know some border stores are closing, but this one is not. I don't think it's one of them. And the topic is love in the afterlife. So if you can go, it's at 7 p.m. on Monday. And it's going to run maybe an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, or something like that. And one of the members of the group, Mimi is her name, is going to be there giving a talk about it. So you might want to show up for that if you have a chance to go. Okay. Back to the question of lower self and consciousness now. So the lower self is a part of us that wants to be a part of God. It can only find God as it co-creates with God. If it's not a co-creator and it just studies God or it meditates or it says various mantras or it reads or whatever, that's not going to help it find God. Well, it may help it find God, but that's not going to do what it takes to know God and to understand God. It is a stepping stone. Education helps. Meditation can be of some value. But those things aren't the real way you do it. The way you do it is through creation of virtue. And sometimes, most of the time, it's carried out through spiritual service to others. And the self really wants to do things like that. But it has a fear. Let me tell you, it's fears, that God is such a big thing that how can it ever succeed at co-creating with a being that is infinite and super big and wide and wise and everything? And so it has all these doubts about this. And the way it gets over the doubts, partly is by what I said, by being educated, by doing some of the things. But then the most important step is it must create. And it must create things that are beneficial in service to others, that are godly, good things. That's the key. That's it. And so many people fail in that part of it because that's the most challenging part. Instead, they go ahead and create more on the job or in a hobby or in something that's much simpler to do. And the lower self, when it does these things, it makes it temporarily feel better. But every time it does so, without completing it to the God level, it feels like a loss of a certain part of its consciousness. So it's weird. While let me give you an example. While a lower self is becoming the world's best runner, and it's practicing running all the time, and it's doing all these things, and it's all about the foot gear, and all about breathing, and the right exercises, and the right food to eat, and and water intake, and everything. As it's doing it, and it gets better and better and better, and it wins some marathons, and it becomes super great, it still feels underneath it all. It still senses some suffering, if that's all it's getting. And the suffering builds up over months and years and decades, so the self becomes more and more despondent, even as it develops all the aspects of a lower self. It can become the greatest in so many areas. It can develop so many great abilities. But if it doesn't connect these to God, in the long run, it suffers. Because suffering is the loss of consciousness. And although it's gaining consciousness in all the mundane acts it does, in the spiritual side, if it isn't doing the same, it loses more consciousness than it gains over time. And it becomes despondent, depressed, and it lacks a sense of greatness. Even though it may boast and it may seem and be like, oh, gee, I do all these great things, etc., in its most private of moments, it feels those negative things. It feels the suffering and depression and loneliness that comes from not being closer to God. So I know that people who are highly successful, as an example, by the standards of mundane world practice, but who aren't co-creating with their creator at similar levels, because there has to be a match here, a balance. We're going to get into that. Those people are suffering. I know they are. And particularly people who are self-avowed as being atheists, and who especially are successful in many other mundane ways, they suffer a great deal more. I feel sorry for them. Yet they hold on to it because intellectually they believe it, and they're too challenged, they're too frightened by their own creator. Isn't that weird? It's an imbalance. It's an imbalance in the self that produces this. It's a very strange effect, but it's so common. And it happens throughout people's life. And it is, you can track it. And it generally, by the age of 42, if a person doesn't shift gears to co-creating more of God, that's the year when it happens, they go into what other people call midlife crisis. It could start as early as 35 or as late as 49, but usually 42 is the mid-range. And they just have a sense of suffering, as though they're not really their own life the way they want to. Sometimes they can't vocalize it. Sometimes they don't realize it's about God in spirit, in living spiritually. Not till later in life. That's unfortunate if they find out later, because you can't go back and regain what you've lost, and you've suffered all that time. So this is a big deal. This is a tremendously big deal. Now, let me talk about some mechanics of this so that you can understand the issue. And some of this stuff I have talked about before, but a lot of it is hopefully new to your ears. Okay. Now, yes, if you've read all the articles and all the books I've read, you probably have an idea. But for some of you, you may not understand this process. Okay. The more you develop the mundane aspects of your lower self, the more you must balance those achievements, those developments of the lower self with spiritual aspects. They have to be balanced. It's like a fourth ray thing. Most people are extremely out of balance today because the fourth ray, even as an energy, hasn't been focused in on the planet since 1675. The third ray, which is a very unbalancing ray to the fourth ray, has been going screaming wild and is at its peak almost right now. And so this has created a real material, we'll say, overabundance of personality and a stunting of self. Too much of the self-development in its creation has been about the material world, and very little of it has been about the spiritual world and co-creating with God. Some people are tremendously successful in some areas of life, oftentimes connected to their careers, but sometimes not. But regardless, they have not met the same challenge in growing their self in a spiritual direction. And that is a big, bad problem. These people are the people that wake up sometimes in their 40s, take a gun to their head, and blow it off. Now, that's a scary thing. And they're more prone to do it than people with personality disorders. Personality disorders are more afraid of death. But these people are afraid of life. And they have a sense of failure, no matter what their success, because they haven't devoted a balance to the spiritual side. If you have this problem, it's probably causing you a good deal of depression. And you can take all the antidepressants and go to see the shrinks and everything. But I also suggest you try this more spiritual approach as well. You may find it works better, especially if you fall into this category and you don't have some chemical stuff and past life stuff going on in your brains or whatever. That's a different issue. So this is fascinating, isn't it? That creation itself can be so imbalanced in the self, the lower self, that a person can make themselves miserable and depressed and suffer. Whoa. Okay. Part of our job as a spiritual group is to try to get other groups to recognize this problem, and individuals as well, and to do something about it, because right now it's being mistreated by more psychological, psychotherapeutic means in some cases, and it's not being treated at all, more at times than not. And people just don't know how to solve the problem, and it needs to be solved. It's one of the main elements that's wrong with the more developed peoples living sometimes in the more developed countries. If you're more developed as a self, you're an older soul usually, but not always. And more often than not, but not always, you may be living in a first world, quote-unquote, country, where the pursuit of development of self is part of the lifestyle. In survivalist countries, third world, people don't have that opportunity as much. But they usually have a better balance between their spiritual side and their material side in the development of the self. in the first world countries, I'm speaking to you, of course, from the United States, and here it's obviously true that I would say a majority of people have some element of this problem of not leading a spiritual enough life to balance the mundane development of self that they have accomplished. And they're not, by their standards, even happy. And they're certainly not as fulfilled, and they certainly seem to be suffering, although they can't quite explain how or why. Of course, now I'm trying to help them do that. And maybe you can share some of this with someone you know. Talk about this with others. When you hear this on this show, don't just apply it to yourself. Tell others about it. Tell them to listen to the show themselves. They can do that. Maybe they want to read something that, you know, we've produced. The important thing is that this is a big problem, and it's bigger in the places you would least suspect it to be. It may be the fundamental reason for people suffering and being unhappy in the more well-off places people can live today. Materialism is a serious problem. Now, if it were balanced by the spiritual side, then that infusion into the materialism would just be a very virtuous development of society and technologies and civilization, because that's what it eventually ends up being, as part of civilization. It's a great thing then. But getting to that balance point, when you're at where we are right now, because of the imbalance of the development of civilization, mostly materially but not enough spiritually, is producing some heck of a bunch of problems. Now, I'm going to tell you the other side of this coin so that you understand it. People who have personality disorders, especially, and live in underprivileged societies, will tend to become fanatic religious devotees. Why? Because they want to materially force change on others, because they can't do it by understanding and being God, a part of God themselves, but they are part of a religion which purports to be part of God. And they may follow, we'll say, very negative elements of certain religions, including, we're obviously talking part of Islam. And in those elements, they find, through their disordered personality, their very suffering nature, because they want to be spiritual, but they can't get themselves to do so because of their personality is disordered, and because they don't have as much development in their material side, they resent it in others, and they fight against others in a material way to get it. So you see, the foundation of this comes from a radicalized religion, a low self-development, oftentimes in the mundane sense, with a improper or spiritually incorrect way of understanding God, a way that is very concrete, in a sense. You know, God is Allah who, as an example, who seeks to slay, cut the heads off of those who ever leave Allah's graces, and who in some way are preventing others from being spiritual by the definition of the religion, which includes Shia, you know, laws and ways of supposedly living every moment of your life. In a sense, what we're saying is the personality disorder has extended itself as a subconscious extension to the religion, and the religion tells you everything just the way the personality does on a subconscious level, and tries to run your life so that you can't be a creative person, either mundanely or spiritually. those are all the things that happen when you have these terrible combinations of destitute and personality disorder, dysfunctional families, history of wars, dictatorships that are awful to people, laws that are cruel and unjust. All of that produces this terrible result. And we are living it today. How do we change it? By waking those people up. If you've got a personality disorder, getting over it can take years. But the beginning of it is to recognize that something isn't right in yourself rather than in others. If you continue to say it's the others that are doing it to us, it's the Israelis, it's the Americans, it's this government or that government or this group of people, it's capitalists, it's somebody that's doing it. At that point, you lose the ability to make the change. Some people with these kinds of personality disorders aren't into religion so much. They're into a fanatic political movement. They may be communists of various flavors, Marxists, Maoists, you know, you name it, Leninists, who cares? They're one of those guys, you know. They may be fascists, and they may be something like that. But the severity of the disorder causes them to then say it's the other folks that are my problem. They're stopping me from being myself. They're preventing me from existing the way I want to. So I have to try to dominate, control, and maybe destroy them if I'm to be okay. They can't coexist with others from different thoughts, and especially if those other thoughts are truly spiritual ones, because they are not spiritual. Don't get fooled by what they may say. They may claim to be religious. Oh, I go to church, I do this, I do that. They are not. They can't be by nature. If they were spiritual, they wouldn't have the problem. They wouldn't be acting in the ways they're acting. They wouldn't be killing in God's name. They wouldn't be imprisoning and stoning to death or whatever, cutting their heads off. They wouldn't be doing any of that crazy stuff. God's name. Really. So is finding God as a real being that's so important to them? How could they do that? Well, it's hard to do. A. Maslow said a long time ago, you can't do it because people who are too challenged by the world around them, that there's so many things that they don't have, they can't get into the God thing. I disagree with them, by the way. I disagreed then. I disagree today. Why? Because instead of a hierarchy of needs that are material, human beings have an even greater hierarchy of needs that are spiritual. Remember? That's what I just said earlier in the last half hour. So that's where Maslowian psychology falls apart. It's not right. You just have to awaken in people real love, real spiritual desires, real spiritual focus, and you have to help them to see a God that isn't a suicidal, homicidal lunatic. Because if that's the God, then what's the devil? A philanthropist who wants to serve other people and give it a, I mean, everything's upside down, right? So helping them to see God is very important. Now, how do you help somebody to see God who wants to kill you? Well, first of all, you have to prevent them from killing you. And in some circumstances, for a few people, unfortunately, they may end up dying in the process if you're protecting yourself. But in most circumstances, it's not necessary. It isn't necessary to kill other people in most circumstances. Sometimes in the most radical ones, it might be. Instead, the better way is to show them a spiritual side and to correct her own material problems. That's what the United States has not been doing. And if we did this, we being those of you who are listening to me from the United States, and those who are listening outside the United States, this is an important thing to consider. Countries like the United States, we're leading countries. We need to change ourselves to a more balanced spiritual life. Other people may then still hate us sometimes or disagree with us, but then not to the point where they won't see that there's God in us. And that helps. So being an example of the teaching is more important than teaching the teaching. If you aren't a good example, you can teach till the cows come home and it won't change anybody. But if you're an example and you're not a great teacher, people will notice. And it'll start making a change in them. Their fears of approaching God, the real God in the world, they'll start doing. And then they'll realize all the things that are wrong in whatever religion they've been following that have been nutso, crazy. And they'll change their ways. That's one of the best things we could be doing. How do we do that? By being truthful. Our leaders need to be truthful, which they're far from. When I say leaders, I'm talking about the leaders who, at this point, have the most power in this country, at least. Some leaders overseas have recently started to wake up to some of the things I'm talking about. But that's another part of the news. And the interesting part about all of this is truthfulness is a big part of other people starting to gain some respect for a person's spirituality. Now, truthfulness is not, quote-unquote, telling the truth. It's creating truth. Helping others to see the truth through your own actions. Realize that the things that you're doing are for benefits greater than yourself, and certainly not just for any or all material issues in your life. We need to start doing things because they aren't just a material outcome. They have to have something greater in them. They have to help people to become greater beings. Some people are going to say, well, hey, wait a second, and we should get rid of capitalism because it's material, isn't it? No. Capitalism as an ism is supposed to be balanced between creativity and self-individual creation, along with working with others and helping others to do the same, while you gain the needs materially in existence. That's a big, big difference from being material. There are some capitalists who have no interest in acquiring large amounts of material things. They do it because they want to be creative. They do it because they know it helps others to be creative as well. And they do it because they want to help people in a spiritual sense, not just in a physical sense. Yes, they would like people to have the basic needs if they can choose to create them themselves for themselves if they're capable of it. Why? Because if you give people things that they're capable of creating themselves, you remove the opportunity for them to grow their lower self. And you're showing them the wrong thing to do in terms of God. So then they're going to have an even harder time finding God besides making more material things for themselves. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have a population of people, millions, and you decide we're very wealthy. We've got all this material stuff. To those millions of people, we'll give them all the basics of life, even health care insurance, a housing, a job, but a job that they make enough money so that they can do virtually anything they want in their life. A pension, retirements, vacations. They get a whole thing. But they don't have to do half, a third, a quarter of what they would need to do if they were going to do it for themselves because we're giving it to them, making up for the difference so they're all equal. There's a social justice. You think so? After you give them all those things, those people can no more find God than the man in the moon. Or then possibly, then maybe a frog could. Why? Because you deprive them not only of growing the material side of their self, you deprive them of being wise enough in your own giving so that you help them to see God rather than to find the important thing in life is having material things. You've taught them the wrong thing, and you never exposed the right thing to them, which is we're here to co-create with our Creator, and you should be helping them to do that rather than giving them things so they don't do anything or do very little. You see, these are very damaging things. Very, very harmful. What if someone is starving? What if someone is very, very ill? What if someone has some great need that they cannot handle? Should we be compassionate? Yes. Should we help them? Yes. Should we help them beyond the level where they are just out of the woods? No. Not in the way that we just keep giving to them. Not in a way in which we deny them the opportunity to develop more of themselves. Another interesting thing about this is when you do that kind of thing, you give to people and you put them on welfare, they develop stronger and stronger personality disorders besides lower selves. Why? Because the personality wants to get something for nothing. It enjoys it. And as you get something for nothing, it loves less, which causes the self to become less conscious. Then it suffers more through itself. It can't suffer until the end of its existence, but it suffers more through itself. And it doesn't care if it gets disordered because it thinks it's being successful in controlling the people that are giving to it. It misreads that, and it thinks it's getting something for nothing, which it interprets as love. People who aren't loving and people who don't feel loved want something for nothing. They become gamblers. They become, they get into life in ways in which everything is for the moment and for excitement, because remember, the personality doesn't have that, and if itself is diminished, it will do crazy things in itself to get the stimulation, all because it doesn't have God co-created in its life, all because some people are giving things to people instead of helping the people to be giving to others in wise ways by helping them to find God and co-create with God. Create virtuous things in life and light in the world around them and help others to do the same, a pay-it-forward God principle, and help them to fend for themselves as well in a material sense. But while they're doing that, they're being charitable and helping others with the safety nets in the rare circumstances where it's needed and continually helping others to become more self-sufficient in a material and spiritual sense all the time. Those are critical factors to be considered. Wow. A lot to be said there. What about consciousness and love now? When a person loves and givingness, the consciousness of the person, at least in theory, continues to grow. Because love is part of consciousness. Love is the ability to see that there is a unity between yourself and those that you're giving to. Here's the point, though. The amount that a person gives has to be commensurate with their ability to give wisely. If a person gives unwisely, then what they call love is really harmful to others, and it lowers their consciousness rather than raises. So not all love raises consciousness. Only love that is wise, meaning it helps and serves others to become more loving themselves and to develop more of their selves, etc. Love is a conditional element in the development of consciousness. Too many people live their life in a very wrong way. Let me describe it. They assume any time someone comes up to them or someone approaches them or someone asks them for something that they need to be giving to them exactly what that person wants. Well, you see, the problem with that is you're letting the dog wag the tail. Then you're giving to people who may be very personality disordered, who may have all kinds of other issues. And what you're giving them is making them worse rather than better. How does that work? Well, God is giving. God is love. No, that isn't what God is. God is creative and wise in its giving, both. And God is free. It gives you freedom to do that. God doesn't tell you you got to love this person just because they need something from you. Matter of fact, people that are needy, you have to be most careful of. That doesn't mean you shouldn't give to them, but what you may give to them may not be what they want. Too bad. So sad. You help them to become a more loving person themselves. You help them to gain a better, more wise approach to how they're going to give to others by better planning, better understanding, all the things that are part of the second part of God's mind. They have to be there. Plus, you also want to help them become creative at the same time so they're better thinkers like God. They not only give like God, but they think like God. That's the best combination. Well, you balance those two aspects in a spiritual sense, and then you try to balance it with the form side in a material sense. So it's all nicely balanced together. If you can balance like that, you can be a great teacher. You can be a great spiritual leader. You can do many great things because that's part of those factors necessary to live that kind of life. So where does that end up? Where does it give us something to sum up our show tonight? Well, the first thing to be cognizant of is that most people don't even know what consciousness is. So if you're trying to help people become more conscious, it sometimes might help to explain on a very rudimentary basis, if you can, what consciousness really is. Then you need to let people know that they have two parts of themselves, the subconscious part, which is, if you want to call it personality, you can call it whatever you want. That's trying to control a lot of stuff, and that may get disordered, may get problematic, and that is necessary for survival, particularly when we're younger. So you can't just say, well, I'll just get rid of it. But there's also the conscious part, which wants to be present in the moment, wants to live in all three parts of time, understand its past and have memory and access through its personality to memory, while it also is able to plan its future and think of future events, but not lose the moment of time that exists in each and every present moment. And it's very necessary for a person to have this, and people who have low self-development do not, and they suffer. And if you know people like this, you need to talk to them, because you can help them. You can bring them to a place where just that alone can change their life. I don't care how long they've been in therapy. If they aren't doing that, they're not going to get better. It truly is the case. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to be concerned about the nature, in a bigger sense, of what's going on in the world today, of how badly people's selves have been diminished, of how badly people's personalities have become disordered, and how badly religion has been turned upside down and God's been turned upside down into some kind of monstrous thing that promotes murder, no freedom, no liberty, a kind of mental martial law, if not a physical one, and oftentimes a physical one as well, a patriarchal, oftentimes, approach that is totally dismissive and destructive to women in more cases than not, and that does not have any balance in it of all the things that make God really great. And yet they're saying, could be God is great. Yeah, God is great. And maybe they say that because they haven't found God and are really looking for it. The things that we can do in our situation, if you are in this situation, I hope you are, that you have more material worth, is to not let that become the dominant element in your life. Balance your own life and show that you're a spiritual being. Talk to others. Communicate. Help. Serve. And show that materiality is only a part of existence in the physical world and less of one in the astral, of course, and mental worlds. So things change. If we can do that, and we can do that together, we can make some changes in the political nature. We can possibly stop what is looking like a calamity about to take us. And we can move ahead to a new kind of world. One where there's no socialism, communism, any kind of isms. There's just free people, free thinking, with liberty, and with the ability to co-create with their creator as much and as often as they can. That's the world we should be seeking. Not a world where people, where we have a nanny type of government that controls and regulates us. Not where we are regulated or controlled by anything other than our both desire and our ability and will to co-create with our Creator. And if we can do this with love, if we can do this in ways that show exceptional charity, love, givingness, that is so wise that we make sure that we don't give people what they want, even if we're threatened by them. We give them what they need as best as we can. And that makes us real heroes as well in the midst of chaos and destruction. And the last thing I want to talk about tonight is the eventual lower self becoming part of the higher self. The higher self is a part of this being that's connected to our soul. And to become a higher self, you need to do spiritual discipline, not just spiritual co-creation. You have to be spiritually disciplining yourself. There are four stages of it. I don't have enough time to go through all of them. But I will say this, that each one of the four stages gradually joins the lower self to the higher self, and a person becomes not only everything I just described in the last few minutes, but something even greater. A person becomes a super being capable of doing and influencing amazing things around them because they can see God at much higher levels, they can co-create with God at much higher levels, beyond just the mental sphere that we talked about during the show, into the Buddhic realm and beyond. When you can do that, you create beauty in yourself and in others. And that beauty is so stunning that each person who has it becomes like a leader in themselves and a great teacher. Now, the joining of the lower self and higher self is done in stages of percentages. The first stage takes 10%, the second 25%, the third 50%, up to 75%, and then the final stage, you do it 100%. When you do it 100%, the odd thing about it is, and as you're getting closer, you hit the 50% point, etc., instead of this great being we call our inner guide or solar angel or whatever you would prefer calling it, instead of that being constantly giving to us by helping us to have a conscience, by helping us to overcome our fears of death, particularly subconscious fears of death from our personality and many other issues, we start giving to it and to others through it in groups and then eventually in whole populations and in a vast number of ways. We look at all of our resources as being the resources of all rather than of us alone or even of us in some smaller group of people. We're doing this for a whole planet and beyond. That's the perspective you gain when you start to join, and as you join more with your solar angel, with your higher self. And the other thing about the higher self is it sees evil in everything that is evil, and it doesn't see evil in things that aren't evil, and it knows how to deal with evil in exactly the appropriate way to deactivate it or to prevent its further destruction of God's growth, which is the life of itself, life itself. It's able to do that in a remarkable way. And it's able to do that because it has superseded all of the aspects of the mental world. And it has unified every element of the mental world into truth. There are no things that are untrue in the higher self. So a person learns to live their life in light and in truth. It's not just being a good Boy Scout and telling the truth. It's something so far beyond it, it's unimaginable. It's living the truth, living the light, so others can enter your sphere of it and you can help them to do it. This is the ultimate goal of all lower selves, is to become fused or joined with the higher self. And I hope for all of you, you will eventually have that experience if you aren't at this point there. Once you do, once you even have a small fraction of it, life becomes totally different. But I wanted to finish the thought, though. I wanted to let you know that the solar angel leaves us as our shepherd and our guide as we become fused with it. It isn't like you get close with this being and you're just all warm and fuzzy. Just the opposite. It's no longer taking our fears away. We have to learn to live as totally self-actualized beings. And it allows us to do that by giving us that further room. Well, we're out of time for right now. I hope this has all made some sense to you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.